scripture reading for you is Matthew chapter 6, 19:1. Matthew chapter 6, 19:1. Lay not up yourselves treasures upon earth, where moth and rust doth corrupt, and where thieves break through and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust doth corrupt, and where thieves do not break through nor steal. 21. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. Well, good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Always thankful for the opportunities that I have. We hit the 2-month mark. That was what we were shooting with for baby Uriah. So he is here with me, as well with my wife. That is much long waiting, you know. I've missed my wife with me by my side, and I've certainly, Avi has missed Uriah. Every time she meets, she goes, baby, baby. So we're glad to be here, all with one family. I'm very thankful, it's a mix of being honored and very humbled at the same time. The elder's decision, I have reflected on it and prayed about the decision, so on and so forth, but I don't think there's too many things that you could be offered where you'd be so humbled. He's reflecting on my life and all those things, but I'm very thankful to the Sandyville family. Since I've been here, even when I came here and subbed the first time, I felt the kindness, the support, and the care, and I'm very thankful for that, and hopefully that as we serve and labor with you here, that I will serve the best of my ability, and I'm just so thankful for your support, patience, love, and understanding. I really, really am. So let's just talk. Money, money, money. You know, a lot of times preachers won't go there, you know, because they feel like, well, you're talking about that for your purposes alone, and then if you're going to gospel media or somewhere, you know, you go somewhere else to travel, it seems like a weird subject to bring up the first time with some individuals that you first meet. But it's interesting because certainly money is a Bible topic, one that the Bible writes extensively about, the old and the new and all throughout. In fact, you think of our Lord's parables, a lot of them are tied to money. Why? Because we are all tied to money at some point in our lives. Certainly it's something that we can relate to. But preaching on money, for whatever reason, has made people uncomfortable. In fact, if you look at lessons throughout the Brotherhood, a lot of times all you find is money lessons on giving. And that's pretty much all, that's where it stops. But the Bible certainly doesn't stop there. In fact, if you read through Proverbs, there's so much practical financial advice that the Bible gives. And certainly there could be many lessons filled with the financial advice of the Bible. Certainly the Bible tells us to be good stewards and to watch out for things such as debt and things of that nature. But we're going to look at three very core ideas that I think the Bible does not hesitate to talk about when it comes to financial advice. The first is that money cannot satisfy. Now, a lot of people struggle with that, and they learn that on later in life. As they go and they pursue money with all their being, they try to accumulate all the possessions that they can, and then they realize at the end of it, I am not satisfied. Well, the Bible would have told you that a long, long time ago. If we look in Ecclesiastes chapter 5 and verse 10, the Bible just says plainly that he who loves money will not be satisfied with money. It says, nor he who loves wealth with his income, this also is vanity. You know, money cannot satisfy. It's kind of like salt water. If you drink salt water, yeah, I mean, you might feel something there for a minute, but you will never be satisfied. If you drink salt water, you want it again and again and again and again. It's like you can never be quenched. If you're trying to fill your life up with money, if you're trying to fill your life up with possessions, the Bible is warning you, you will not be satisfied. It is like going to salt water. Again and again you drink and never satisfied. The Bible teaches us to be content. Which is, I think, very hard in America because we are really a nation built on personal freedom. Not only personal freedom to pursue wealth. To the degree which you want to pursue it, you can pursue it to the, you can pursue it to the nth degree. You can let it consume all your time. You can let it consume your family time. The time that you should dedicate to other things. you're free in this country to pursue it as much as you want. And the Bible warns you will not be satisfied with possessions of this earth. You will not be satisfied with money. In Hebrews chapter 13, verse 5, it says, keep your life free from the love of money and be content with what you have. Keep your life free from the love of money. As soon as you start to love money, what happens is your priorities have totally shifted. Because the Bible tells us to love the Lord our God with all our heart, with all our soul, and with all our mind. So as soon as you fall into the trap of loving money, what happens is your priorities totally shift in life. And we probably all know individuals that have got lost in trying to satisfy themselves with money. And as they go on the quest to try to satisfy themselves with money and possessions of this earth, slowly but surely, their relationship starts to fade. Slowly but surely, church attendance starts to disappear in the pursuit of money. Well, you say, Kyle, am I not supposed to work? Am I not supposed to work hard? Is that what you're trying to tell me? No, actually, I'm not trying to tell you. I'm telling you that the danger is the love of money. The Bible actually encourages to work hard. The Bible actually encourages to work and labor for the things that we have. But there's a trap there that the Bible is warning us about, is that if you love money, and that is your number one pursuit, your priorities will shift. And people will be able to see it in your lives. See, with so many things in our lives, it comes to a balance. The Bible gives you a safe range in which to live your life when it comes to money. You know what the safe range is? Work and overwork. You need to fit inside that range. See, on this side is work, right? Over here is work. The Bible actually tells us that we should work. In 2 Thessalonians chapter 3 and verse 10, it says if a man doesn't work, neither should he eat. Working is a Bible principle. Now, we're not talking about those that are not able. You know, those that have some type of disability or they have some type of issue where they can't work, we understand that. But if you are able to work, the Bible pushes that idea very strongly. Then you should provide for your own in 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 8. We should provide for our own, certainly. We should work and labor with our hands so we're able to give. That we should work, so on and so forth. So the gap is we can sneak over to this side where we're incredibly lazy, where we're not working at all, where we actually perhaps claim things that we shouldn't be claiming to get out of work. The Bible teaches to work. That's one side of the range. Sometimes our brethren fall on the dangerous side of that range. They're able to work, and yet they say they're not, or they claim things that perhaps they shouldn't in certain cases. That's one dangerous end of the spectrum. The other end of the spectrum is overwork. The other end of the spectrum is overwork. And what happens is people love money, they love the pursuit of money and possessions. You can work hard over here, but you've got to keep your priorities right. You can work hard, you can dedicate time to your craft and whatever you do, and you can keep your priorities right. But where you get to overwork is when we start to see the priorities shift. We start to see time going to places that perhaps it shouldn't. We see time going away from the church. We see time going away from our family. Those things that are truly important. The Bible warns us to keep in God's safe range. Where's the safe range? A Christian that is able should be working. Well, should I work so much that I mess up my priorities? No, you have to stay in that safe range. And you know what? You probably have a better perspective on that than I do. Where did you fall in that range? In the range of work and overwork, are you staying in that safe range? Or are you getting in the danger zones of going over here or going over here? We have to be ever careful and mindful that money does not take over our lives. God has given us a safe scale and to work in. And you know what? If you're struggling with this end of the spectrum, the Bible really tries to pull you back in. If you're getting close to overworking, the Bible tries to pull you back in when you read 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 8. In 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 8, really 1 Timothy chapter 6 talks about those who are rich. But in verse 8 it says, having food and clothing, with these you shall be content. Now you think about that for a second. That's hard for Americans to really suck in for a second. With these things, be content. You know, if you think about that verse, all of a sudden, overworking, you kind of get pulled a little bit more towards the center. I need to be a little bit content. I don't have to work that extra shift so that I'm pulled away from my family. I don't have to work that extra shift. Okay, I'm not saying not provide for your family. I'm not saying not work hard. But we all know that there is a danger zone on this end of the spectrum where we start working so much that things in our lives start to slip. Things in our lives that we know should be priority, those things in our lives that we know are important, we have to watch out for the love of money. God is supposed to be our number one love. So if you love money, what you've essentially done is you have quit your priorities. We have to be ever careful that our priorities don't shift. In 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 9 through 10, it says, "But those who desire to be rich fall into temptation and a snare, into many foolish and harmful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil, for which some have strayed from the faith in their greediness, and have pierced themselves through with many sorrows." The love of money leads to messed up priorities. It's not money itself. It's not money itself. Money's just paper. But people love the paper so much. People love the possession so much, they're willing to sacrifice other things that they know are important. Sometimes they do sacrifice their family. Sometimes they sacrifice the church. Sometimes they sacrifice spiritual things. It's not that the Bible's not telling you to work hard. The Bible does tell you to work. But if you work so hard to a point where you're chasing the dollar, you're chasing the next raise, you're chasing the next thing for your business, you leave a whole lot behind that God doesn't want you to leave behind. It's all about priorities. In Matthew chapter 6 and verse 24, it says, "No one can serve two masters, for either he will love one and hate the other, or he'll devote time to one and despise the other." You cannot serve God and money. Now, sometimes it says God and man, but I think an appropriate term that definitely could be put there is God and money. You can't serve God and money. Is God number one in your life or money? If you're pursuing money first, we see how that affects your priorities. If you're pursuing God number one in your life, we'll see how that affects your priorities. In the United States, we come into a very dangerous, we're in a very dangerous location. We have freedom to pursue as much money, as much wealth, as much possession that we can. It's dangerous. Other countries, they struggle with different things. I think Americans, we have to look at ourselves and be careful that we don't get too close to this range. Because if you get too close, things will start happening. You know, I think we really have to honestly ask and consider the passage that was read for us to start the lesson, Matthew chapter 6. In Matthew chapter 6, starting in verse 19, it says, "Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." We have to think. We have to consider. We have to take a moment to consider, where do you fall on the scale? The scale of work and overwork. We don't want to fall on the other side of the scale. We don't want to fall on the other side of the scale of overworking. Where do you fall? Where is your danger zone as an individual? I have to think about it for myself. I have to think about it in perspective of my family. I have to think about those things. Do you have to think about those things as well? I think so. But the Bible is telling you to be very careful. Because if you love money, and it does become your number one, you might not even say you love money. You don't have to say it. It doesn't have to come out of your mouth. You can see it in an individual's priorities. Because when money's the number one pursuit, we start to see other things start stepping back in people's lives. The Bible would first tell you about money. It will not satisfy. It's like salt water. You can keep drinking, but it will not fulfill your life. You have to be careful of the danger of the love of money and the pursuit of possessions upon this earth. That it could very easily take away your family. It could very easily take away your spiritual life. It could very easily take away the most important things of your life if you're not very careful. Number two, you have to realize that the Bible is teaching you that money cannot buy the most important things. And we talked about that last week. You know, money can't really buy the things that are most important. Those things that really, truly matter. I'm not saying that money's not important. We need money to do the work of the church and things of that nature. But money cannot buy the most important things. Money cannot buy your soul. Money cannot buy your time. And people make arguments, so on and so forth. But I think we understand that you can have money, but you're not going to add a significant amount of time to your clock. You're not going to add a significant amount of time to your clock. We all are only going to be here for a temporary time. In Deuteronomy chapter 8, Moses is trying to give a warning to the Israelites there. They're about to go into the promised land, and I think the warning is so relevant to individuals such as us that live in the United States where we're so richly and bountifully blessed with physical possessions. Moses is warning them in Deuteronomy chapter 8, you're going to go in the promised land, and things are going to go well. Things are going to go really well, and he warns them, do not forget God. Deuteronomy chapter 8, verses 11 through 14. It says, "Beware that you do not forget the Lord your God by not keeping his commandments, his judgments, and his statutes which I command you today. Lest when you have eaten and are full and have built beautiful homes and dwell in them, and when your herds and your flocks multiply, and your silver and gold are multiplied, and all that you have is multiplied, when your heart is lifted up and you forget the Lord your God." Yes, be careful in America. That when we are pursuing things, that we don't pursue money to the point that we love it, that we abandon God. That was the warning of Israel. You're going to go in the promised land, you're going to have beautiful homes. You're going to have plenty of food. All your needs are going to be taken care of. In fact, beyond your basic needs, really above. Don't forget God. That's the warning. Because you can accumulate all the wealth in the world and you'll never be able to buy your soul. You know, I always found it interesting when we think of our lives in perspective. You know, our lifetime, we accumulate wealth. We accumulate these possessions throughout life. And you know how quickly you lose them? Exactly. As soon as you die, they're gone. The Bible warns you of this in 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 7. It says, "You have brought nothing into this world, and certainly you can carry nothing out. What are you taking with you?" The Pharaohs tried to do that, didn't they? They tried to bury everything. "We're taking it all with us, aren't we?" No, you can't take any of it with you. You can't take the physical things. You can't take the money. You can't take the possessions. You can't take the land. You can't take the house. You can't take the car. Now, we understand that we can leave some of that thing to help our family, but you're not taking any of it with you. So the question is, what are those things that are most worthwhile? Those things that are eternal and last forever. In 1 John chapter 2 and verse 17, it says, "And the world is passing away along with its desires, but whoever does the will of the Lord abides forever." Are you focused on what you should be focused on? It's amazing how easily we get focused on the things that are temporary. We get focused on the house. We get focused on the car. We get focused on all those things. I'm not saying that we can't have these things, but if your primary pursuit in life is to chase these things, it's going to affect your other priorities. I like what it says in Luke chapter 12 and verse 15. And the tale, well, I'll just read the whole verse. In Luke chapter 12 and verse 15, it says, "And he said to them, take care. Take care. And be on your guard against all covetousness. For one's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. For one's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions." Isn't that so true? Unfortunately, I think we get it all mixed up. We get it all mixed up somewhere along our time in life. We mix up that our life does not consist in the abundance of our possessions. Life is so much more. And we know that, don't we? Our life is so much more. And you can see that whenever someone comes to the end of their life. Because if I talk to people, as they close in on the end of their life, they're not asking about money. You know what they're asking for? They're asking for time. They're asking for forgiveness. They're asking for the truth to be told to them. That's what they're asking for. They don't ask, "Hey, give me another $100,000 while I'm on my way out." That's not what they say. They say, "Please give me a little bit more time with my loved one. Give me a little time for forgiveness. To go back and forgive those that I need to forgive. Or I need to be forgiven of something. I have wronged someone and I need to make that right." At the end of life, we all know that money can't buy the things that matter most. But yet, where does their time go so many times? It's not wrong to be wealthy, brothers and sisters in Christ. In America, we are all wealthy compared to the world. Significantly. It's not a sin to be wealthy. It's how did you get that wealth? How did you use that wealth? You have to be careful. The warnings in 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 17 through 19, it just says, "Command those who are rich in this present age not to be haughty, nor to trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God, who gives us richly all things to enjoy. Let them do good, that they may be rich in good works, ready to give, willing to share, storing up for themselves a good foundation for the time to come, that they may lay hold of eternal life." There's people rich in the Old Testament. And the warning is given to them. It says, command those that are rich. Well, what do the rich people need to do? Not to be haughty. What's that, arrogance? Not to trust in those uncertain riches. Some people trust in those riches more than they trust in God. And then it says, willing to share, ready to give. See, those are the commandments to those that are rich, to those that are wealthy, and you fall within that group. Some people get so focused on their goods and their possessions and miss out on those things that are truly important. You see that in Luke chapter 12. In Luke chapter 12, we have what's often referred to as the rich fool. And the rich fool has all these barns, and he's building more barns. You know, the story of things in Luke chapter 12. Luke chapter 12, verses 13 through 21. And that story ends, this rich man is building up all these barns, he's storing all his riches, all his stuff, he's storing it all up, and it ends this way in Luke chapter 12 and 21. Actually, starting verse 20. It says, "But God said to him, Fool, this night your soul will be required of you. Then whose will those things be which you have provided? So it is he who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich towards God." You read the last few verses, those are kind of, you know, fool, your soul's going to be required of you. Gained all these possessions through life, but that doesn't do anything in perspective of your soul many times. You have to use those things for the benefit of God. But in verse 21 it says, "So is he who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich towards God." Where's your treasure? Where's your treasure? I really don't think the crime is being wealthy. The crime is when our priorities get messed up. See, this man so focused on his barns, this man so focused on filling up his barns, you know what happened? He forgot about his soul. That's the real crime, isn't it? Forgetting about your soul, forgetting about your family, forgetting about spiritual things, forgetting about spiritual treasure, forgetting about eternity. That's the real crime, isn't it? It doesn't matter how much you accumulate. I think God made that clear in Matthew 16, verse 26. You can gain the whole world, but if you lose your soul, what worth is it to you? Some people live with the attitude, "Well, God, I'm gonna spend my life and I'm gonna accumulate all this wealth. Just forgive me for this period of time. I'm gonna accumulate all this wealth and then I'm gonna give it back to you later." That's how some people live their life. But what happens is they get to this overwork part of the thing, and they go over here, and for a period of time, they have the wrong priorities. Yeah, you're accumulating a lot of wealth, but your priorities are messed up through that period of time. People are like, "Have mercy on me, God. Let me go out and make all this money, and then I'll come back." I don't think that's the life that God wants us to live. You know, God has given us so much in life. He's given us so many things that cannot be bought. James chapter 1 and verse 17 says, "Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above and comes down from the Father of life." He's given us love, forgiveness, salvation, grace, mercy, all these things that cannot be purchased with money. And somehow, throughout our lives, we forget the things that are most important cannot be bought with that thing we worked so hard to get. I think the Bible would teach you that money does not satisfy. I think that the Bible would teach you that money cannot buy the things that really matter. And the last thing we're going to look at today is that you're going to have to give an account. You're going to have to give an account of your money. You know, think about the judgment scene for a second. I think the Bible doesn't give us all the details of the judgment scene, but it does give us some. And one of the aspects of the judgment scene that I think is clear is that we are each individually going to stand and give an account of the things that we have done. In Romans chapter 14 and verse 12 says, "So then each of us will give an account of himself to God." We are going to give an account to God. Now, when you think of giving an account, I think of the IRS. You know, I think the IRS, it's tax season, right? We've got to report our stuff to the tax people. We know that is good and right, even though some people get very irritated by it. But in Matthew chapter 12, we see that Jesus says, "Hey, pay your taxes." In Romans chapter 13, we see, "Pay your taxes." You know that you're going to give an account to God. Sometimes I think people are more afraid of the IRS than they are of God. "I don't want to get audited." No, sirree. "I don't want them to get me. I don't want them to catch me, you know, doing something that I shouldn't be doing." Well, one, we shouldn't be doing things that are wrong or shady in any respect, because we should be honest. But I think people are more afraid of the IRS than they are of God sometimes. You realize that God's always looking at your book? You know that God knows how much is coming in. I don't. And honestly, I don't care. But God knows. And you will have to give an account in everything in your life, both good and bad. That's what we see in 2 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 10. It says, "For we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, and each one may receive the things done in the body according to what he has done, whether good or evil." Question, can you handle your money in a good way? Yes. Question, can you handle your money in an evil way? Yes. When you get to judgment day, yes, God is going to look at you as an individual and the actions that you have done, but one of those areas is going to be your money. He's going to look at the book, he's going to see those things, and he's going to say, did you handle these things appropriately? Well, what kind of things is he going to look for, Kyle? Number one, he's going to look for, how did you gain that money? Did you gain it honestly? Some people gain their money in dishonest ways. The Bible doesn't want us to do that. In Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 28, it says, let him who stole steal no longer, but let him labor with his hands so he may have something to give. A little paraphrase of Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 28. The Bible does not want you to gain wealth in a dishonest way. We say, I'm good with that. No big deal. I don't gain money in a dishonest way. You know what God's also going to look at? What you did with those riches once you got them. Did you give them? Did you share them? Did you try to help individuals with the wealth that you have? He's going to consider that. And what I would caution from someone who falls into this trap, it'll never be enough. Some people are like, well, once I get to this amount, I'll have enough to give. You know what? Once I get to $50,000, I'll have enough to give. Once I get to $100,000, I'll have enough to give. No, the Bible teaches us to give along the way. Give cheerfully. You know, we're so rich compared to the world. You know, it's kind of amazing when you try to think about it for a second. There's people that don't sleep on a mattress. There's people that don't get warm meals. There's people that are in a situation far worse than ourselves. We are rich. And many times people say, well, I'm not rich. Well, you are compared to the rest of the world. And I hate to tell you, the Bible was written to the world. It was written to Americans, yes, but it was written to everybody in the world. So we have our brothers and sisters in Christ Africa reading this, and they're reading about the rich, and I think sometimes they're going, we're rich! Well, they are, spiritually. But perhaps not as much physically as we are. You know, did you use your riches in a good way? Did you hoard them, or did you try to share and try to help? You'll never have enough. Never have enough. Were your riches used for evil purposes? You know, some people think, well, if I give to God, you know, this portion, I can do whatever I want with the rest. No, God is going to have an account, and he's going to see that you spent this. I know you burnt the receipt, but he's got it up there. He's going to know everything that you spent, every dime. You're going to give an account for these things. In Genesis chapter 5, verses 1 through 5, it talks about the rich and this and the situation that they fall under. But read what some of these individuals are doing. In verse 3, it says, your gold and silver are corroded in James chapter 5, verses 1 through 5. It says, at the end of verse 3, it says, you have heaped up treasures in the last days. Indeed, the wages of laborers who mowed your fields, which you kept back by fraud, cry out, and the cries of the reapers have reached the ears of the Lord. You have lived on earth in pleasure and luxury. You have fattened your heart as in the days of slaughter. Again, chapter 5, when you read 1 through 5, you start to see these individuals, they're heaping up riches for themselves. It looks like they're giving nothing to God. Nothing at all. And then you read on, they're seeing people that are working for them. In verse 4, it says, indeed, the wages of laborers who mowed your field, which you kept back by fraud. People were coming and working on these people's fields, and they were, like, cheating them. They weren't giving them what they were supposed to. They were, you know, they were cheating. God is going to give an account for all of that. Are you a good steward of what God has given you? See, that's a hard mindset, I think, for an American to take up because, you know, personal freedom, I earned it, it's mine. Well, actually, it's God. God, you were purchased, you know, for a price. You are God. Now, does God want you to give him all your money? No. He knows you have to provide for your family. He knows these things. He understands that. But he is going to be looking into how you're handling your book. You know, in many respects, it's almost like we're a tenant, right? You know, can you imagine a tenant for a second? And this tenant is renting this land, and you come to this tenant's land, and he goes, look at this beautiful land. Look at this beautiful land. And you talk to the tenant, well, oh, you're renting it. You know, you walk up to a tenant and they have a house, and the tenant goes, look at this beautiful house, look at this beautiful house. You know, that's not really your house, you're renting that, you know. Look at this beautiful car, look at this beautiful car. They're renting that car. Well, what's your point? Well, really, when you think of all our possessions, we're just renting all of them. But people go, that's my land, that's my house, that's my car. In some sense, on this worldly plane of life, it is. I understand that. But if you get locked into that mindset, you'll be taken to a bad place. You know, in reality, we're kind of like the sharecropper, right? The sharecropper, the master owns his house. Not only does the master own the sharecropper's house, but the master owns the sharecropper's land. The sharecropper works the land and has the harvest. The sharecropper has the house that the master owns, has the land that the master owns. The crop comes in, the master comes and says, I'm ready for my portion. You're on my land, you're in my house, 10%. And the sharecropper goes, I don't think so. I'm not going to give you anything. This is my work, not yours. I think that's sometimes how people treat God. If we don't look at the things that we have in this life as gifts from God, things that He has given us, and certainly we work hard, but certainly God has blessed us with the ability to work, the ability to do these things. In many respects, these things are God, and when we die, they're going to go back to God. People have interesting perspectives when it comes to their money. Sometimes people say things like this, if I had $1 million, I would give 90%. I would give it all. Well, that's easy for you to say because you don't have $1 million. But I know what maybe perhaps you do have. Perhaps you do have $10,000. And it's a little harder to change that statement and say, well, I have $10,000. How much can I give? He's not asking for all of it. He's just asking for a portion. And Malachi, we went over Malachi just a little while ago. At the end of Malachi, you know, they're charged with robbing God. They're robbing God. Are you giving things that God should be given? At the end of the day, you know, it's all going to be His anyway. I'm not saying not to provide for your family. I'm not telling you to work hard. I'm just trying to tell you that the Bible gives you a safe range to work in. The Bible tells you to be a worker, but you know what the Bible also tells you to be? Not an overworker. Because when you're an overworker, here's what happens. Your family suffers, the church suffers, your soul suffers, and you wonder what your treasures might look like in heaven. We'll close out with Matthew chapter 6. Where are your treasures? You got any of those in heaven? Are they all here on this world? Do you have them all stored up here on this world? Matthew chapter 6, verses 19 through 21. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroy, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Where's your heart? That's where your treasures will be. Perhaps you need to become a New Testament Christian. Perhaps you need the prayers of the church. You know, by your actions you can show where your treasure is. You know, I have a co-worker. She has family that moved down to Alabama. You know, she makes trips down to Alabama. She's never been to Alabama, I don't think, before her family went down there. Why'd she go down to Alabama? That's her family. That's where her heart is. You travel where your heart is, where your treasures are. And you can see it in your actions. If you love money, you can see it in someone's actions. If you love the Lord, love the church, you can see it in their actions. It's a balance. And it's a difficult balance that each of us has to ask from time to time. If you're subject to Lord's invitation, we ask you please come as we stand and as we sing.